All right, so we're gonna start the workshop 11 on digital video. Hope everyone's logged into their computers. Hello to everyone who is watching this video stream. So this will just quickly go over what we hope to cover in this workshop today. Basically, we're just gonna review some of the common video file formats. What is a codec versus a wrapper? What kind of resolution you want to use when you're outputting your video? Different types of editing software. And ultimately, because this is a computers and the internet class, how you would get your videos out on the internet. And today, I hope that everyone will be able to work on a video project. We're going to use Windows Movie Maker. It's not a professional video editing software, but it's free if you have Windows XP. And for any Mac users, everything we cover using Movie Maker is pretty applicable to iMovie. So hopefully at the end of the day, everyone will have a sense of how to play with video files and make little projects. So in a previous lecture, I believe David briefly went over different kinds of video files. But first, going backwards, we have the question of what is digital video? Because I don't know how many of you still think of it this way, but probably everyone, when you hear the word video, you probably think of the cassette tape, you know, VHS or beta, that long, thin, flimsy, black material. So basically, that's analog video. Digital video is when the signal gets recorded digitally, so it becomes translated into zeros and ones, as opposed to just a little waveform. However, when you edit, you'll probably still see your... when you edit your video, it's still going to be the same as if you were editing analog or digital, in the sense of what you're doing to the video file, but how you edit it is going to be different in that you don't have anything physical to manipulate. So in the past, you know, if you're doing film editing, you would actually take the celluloid film, cut it up, put it together, retape it, move along, cut out more frames, put in another frame if you wanted a different one. And with today's video editing software, you can still do that, but you just don't actually get to touch anything. It's all done on your computer. So just to briefly go over the nice dry list of common video file formats or extensions that you might see. MPEG, which stands for Moving Pictures Experts Group. And the one to really remember is MPEG-2, because if any of you recall from the problem set, It's a file format that you would see on DVDs. It can get a little confusing because, for example, MP3s, which are a sound file, technically fall into this category of MPEG files, but basically it's just the standard determined by this Moving Pictures Experts group. Next we have AVI, which is Audio Video Interleave. And this one happens to be a Microsoft-designated file format. You might, if you're a Windows editor, so use a Windows machine to do your video editing, chances are this is the file format that you will use the most as your source for your source files. Specifically, when you get your files off of a digital video camera, you will see it listed as DVAVI. But the extension will still be .avi when you save it as a file. The difference between something that's DVAVI and just regular AVI is that the DVAVI is uncompressed and has more information than, say, just a regular AVI file. And so when you're editing in your software program, ideally you'd like to be working with the DVAVI file, but you can still do your editing with a regular compressed AVI file. And then we have DV, digital video. It probably seems like the most obvious shortening. It can be a little confusing because even though it refers to digital video. It doesn't stand for digital video in general. And it can also refer to the little cassette tapes, or depending. There's mini DV, which are about 2 inches by 1 inch approximately. Or there's larger DV cam tapes, which are like that big. But it can also refer to a digital file. And for anyone who's using Macintosh, if you've recorded video and saved it through iMovie, or you're using Final Cut Pro or something, .dv files are probably what you'll be editing with as opposed to AVI. So AVI and DV are sort of the two file formats you want to keep an eye out for when you're wanting to really make sure you have the full quality video files to work with that you can. DivX is sort of ties back into the MPEG. It's a codec, which we're going to go back and actually try to define in a minute. And the reason why that one's a key term to think about is because it's associated with ripping files off of your DVDs. And so you might, if you download a file from the internet, which hopefully you're not doing illegally, if it's been taken off of a DVD or something like that, chances are you'll need a player that has the DivX codec so that you can view these files. Programs such as Xvid help open up those, or one of those players that can open up these files. MOV is a little confusing because technically it's a whole, it's like a technology standard that Apple has created for its QuickTime software. So there's a lot of different specifications you can make regarding your MOV file. So it's not just that you'd say, I want an MOV file, it's going to be this big by this tall by this wide, and it's going to be at this many frames per second. You have a chance to sort of designate even further the encoding technology into which it becomes an MOV file. But mainly, the main thing to remember is that you would associate it with Apple's QuickTime software. So every time you use their QuickTime player or something like that, that's the file format that they're going to want. Also, you can use this file format when editing on an Apple with your video editing software. And I believe that Premiere, which is now a Windows editing software only, will also accept and export MOV files. So it's not exclusive, but it comes from Apple. And then Microsoft released yet another set of video standard technology standards with Windows Media Video. And actually, even though it's developed by Microsoft, the way I understand it, it's not strictly proprietary. I believe that they've actually opened it up so that other people can develop things with the Windows Media Video codec technology set. But you'll usually see this with the Windows Media Player that comes with all the Windows XP machines. And I believe some of the older Windows machines also have Windows Media Player. These may already seem like quite a large group, but there's many, many more, like .asf, just for starters. I mean, basically, if you ever open up any video editing software program, the list of options you have for importing files or exporting files will be longer than the list I mentioned up here. So earlier I mentioned the word codec. And for now, it's just the easiest way to think about it is that it's a method by which to encode or decode the video signals. And it's basically a form of compression. And you might ask, well, you know, why would you do that? You know, we want to keep all the information we have. And also, if we have so many different codecs, doesn't it make it harder to view different video files across the different players that are available and when we edit. And basically, it's so that you can be have more control over the size of your files and the quality of your files. And obviously, you know, you probably will want to use codecs that best that best output your video projects, for example. But in general, there's just a large number, and quite honestly, for everything that is a video file format, such as MPEG or AVI or MOV or WMV, there's a list of at least like 5 to 10 different codecs associated with it that you have to pick. But usually, you know, once you find one or two that you really like, you can stick to using those and then don't really need to worry about the rest of the codecs out there. Something that might come up from time to time, though, is when you're trying to view a video file and your player says, oh, the codec is not found. In which case, it's very nice to just have a large library of codecs so that you never have that problem. Now, I used Wrapper, and really Wrapper is sort of used amongst the E1 staff. It really is just the file format that data is stored as. So, as I mentioned earlier, there's any number of codecs associated for one single file format, and then there's any number of file formats that are associated with video files. So, are there any questions so far regarding that? No questions? Everyone's clear on the difference between...
I'm a little bit lost.
All right. Okay. Let me see. The question is a codec like a driver which enables a file to be read? I would say more, think of it like when you have cryptography,
yep,
and you have a code, and you have a key by which to translate your message into the code, and then that same key deciphers that message. It's better to think of it as sort of that cryptography key. Not that it's like making your files any more secure or anything, but it's sort of more like a translator in a way.
Okay.
Does that help clarify that?
Yeah.
All right. Does anyone regularly use any of these file formats or have viewed a video file? Which one?
WMV.
Okay, so one WMV user.
MOV and DV.
Okay, MOV and DV. Are you an Apple user or?
No, my digital camera takes MOV files, but in order to use them in NeuroVision, I have to convert them to DV.
Oh, wow. Okay, so camera that takes in MOV
or
and...
It's one of the ways. It's either that way or the other way, but I have to convert the file to use it.
All right. I'm guessing your camera probably... starts with DV, and then you have to convert it to MOV. I was just going to say... For everyone who likes to look at the videos of the week or the podcasts, I believe one of the options is an MOV file. So everyone who's been looking at the podcasts, you've been using that. All right, so back to the digital video signal in and of itself. So standard-wise, digital video is 29.97 frames per second, and that might seem like a really strange number. If you kind of think about it, film is at 24 frames per second, which is sort of what the human eye can accept and sort of start to interpolate between still images. Any higher frame rate per second and the human eye really doesn't notice the difference, or around 24 frames per second is where the human eye sort of accepts this concept of motion when you string a whole bunch of still images together. And digital video is just a little higher than that. Sometimes people work in 30 frames per second for, say, something like animation, because it's just easier to think in terms of whole numbers as opposed to decimals. But when you're working with digital video, you'll usually use 29.97. If you ever have to go down in order to make your video files smaller, 12 to 15 frames would be the general bare minimum accepted. And those are, again, animation-based frame rates. So flash animations, for example, may work in 12 or 15 frames per second. If you're thinking where those numbers come from, well, if you think about it, half of the film rate is 12 frames per second. Approximately half of the digital video frame rate is 15 frames per second. So that's just one thing to think of. So that's one thing to think about when you're looking at different digital videos. Image capture formats. Okay, so interlaced versus progressive. This started sort of with television sets and how broadcasts were displayed on monitors. And it really only becomes an issue when you're displaying your video files. Basically, interlaced, what it does is rather than showing everything just all across from left to right in order, it'll do every other line, so like lines 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, etc. first, and then it'll go back and then do 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Whereas progressive will do what I described earlier, which is just go from left to right, next row, next row, next row, next row. And if you're wondering why anyone would have done this, basically interlaced was to help reduce basically the time it takes for your images to show back up. I mean, it takes more, generally more data to do it the progressive way, whereas interlaced meant that they could compress the signal a lot more and still get it out there at a reasonable rate. However, now that we've got the quote-unquote, the whole like high-definition television and everything, we may see more progressive than interlaced video. So that's just how it ends up being outputted. And now we have resolutions. You may see two acronyms that you may be like, what's going on? Because HDTV, I'm sure everyone now has been bombarded with media ads, buy your new HDTV, so I'll leave that alone. NTSC and PAL are different standards for different countries. Basically, NTSC is sort of just the US, Canada, and Mexico, and then PAL is everyone else in the world, with the exception of one or two Asian countries that will use NTSC. And in general, if you're buying a video camera in the US, for example, you're going to be getting an NTSC compatible camera. You can set your camera to PAL, but in general, everything you get, like on a DVD or videotape, will also probably be an NTSC as opposed to PAL. And it used to be different players could only play either NTSC or PAL, which is why you would want to get, say, like a universal VCR. So it's kind of similar to the whole DVD regions thing, where everyone just gets sort of separated. But anyways, resolution refers to the height by width of your screen. And typically, for a full screen video, you'd want to do 720 by 480 pixels. You can tweak that a little bit. Another common one is 640 by 480. But that's the general, I guess ratio is the right word. Well, no, it's not the ratio, but that's the general specs that you would be looking at. PAL switches it up a little strangely, and they go for 768 by 576-ish. Possibly 720 by 576, 720 by 550, but chances are you'll never work on that. And then HDTV, as you can see, 1920 by 1080, that's just big, just really big. So, I mean, in general also, the reason why resolution is something to think about is, for example, when you're outputting, the greater your resolution, the bigger your file, and the longer it will take to export. Also, when you're putting it on the internet, if it's really big, it's going to take a long time for people to load up. It's going to fill their screens. So, things to consider. Usually, for the internet, most videos seem to be in 320 by 240. And again, shameless plug. videos of the weeks and podcasts are 320 by 240. That doesn't mean that your viewers cannot resize them if they happen to be watching them in a QuickTime player or something, but when you're exporting, 320 by 240, magic numbers. Aspect ratio. Okay, now we have the ratios. And that is the ratio between your height and width. And typically you'll want 4 to 3. Subdivide it even further, 1.33 to 1. HDTV is 16 to 9. And film is in between at 1.37 to 1. So 4 to 3 is basically 720 to 480. If you tweak with that anymore, you end up doing the whole black bars thing just to fill up the space. Hence, widescreen is really just two black bars to make it look wider. And you cut off a little bit of the top and the bottom. But, well, properly done widescreen is not that. But to cheat widescreen, to create that effect, you would just stick black bars in, sort of nip a little off the top and the bottom, and then it'd make everything look really wide. And then, so the frames per second, image capture formats, and aspect ratio, they apply to both digital and analog video. Resolution also to a degree applies to analog video in that you would think about that when you're working with your monitor. So bit rate is the only thing that really sort of applies to digital video. And just like sound, the higher the bit rate, the higher the quality, because that's that much more data per second that's being transmitted, whether it's just to your computer monitor or over the internet or anything like that. It's just that more data. So those are the five main characteristics to think about your video files in terms of the presentation and the overall outcome. Any questions on that? I'm trying to rush through this a little bit so we can get to the fun part with playing with video clips and making people do funny things to funny sounds. So then the hardware. Well, hardware slash history side of things. Video connectors. Unfortunately, I do not have pretty pictures of the different cables that I'm going to talk about, or the video connectors, nor do I even have the actual cables or ends that I will talk about. But I'll briefly go over them. S-Video, BNC, Composite, Component, those, you might see S-Video out on your computers, but typically those are used in analog, and they're still used with digital. They're kind of clunky and slow in comparison to the last one, FireWire, which is really, frankly, the easiest way to get your video footage off your camera onto your computer, and then take it off your computer and put it back onto a videotape. So while if this was a very full-fledged video class, I would go into great detail about how to use S-Video, BNC, composite and component video, I actually suggest that everybody look it up in their spare time, because chances are you will very rarely use it, unless in an emergency situation, and most likely you'll be working with FireWire cables and FireWire ports. And if you're wondering why in the world FireWire, it's because besides being nice and fast, you can export both your visuals and your audio at the same time. Sometimes on a video camera you might see a USB port, but typically that will only let you get your video signal off. You usually can't get your audio data off at the same time. You may use the USB port for webcams, especially like say a consumer grade video camera. It'll give you that option to use it as a webcam as well. But typically FireWire will be your friend, and sometimes in the past it could cause problems, because if your FireWire connection, like your port, is not stable, midway through transmission it might drop a frame. So you might lose some bits and pieces of your video files, or trying to get it back onto the tape, it might stutter and stall. Over time, it's gotten improved, so I don't think there's any need to panic. But if anything, you may find that this transmittance stage is where your greatest frustrations will lie. So then we have types of digital cameras. Anybody ever own a digital a video camera before, digital or analog? All right. What kind did you have?
Not digital. It was analog. It had tape.
All right. What kind of tape? Okay, so we had an unidentified small cassette videotape user. What'd you have?
My parents had one of the ones from like the 80s where you carry the VCR with
you. Oh, great. We had the whole workstation, yep. VCR with camera. I've definitely used one of those before.
Yeah, I have a digital camera.
All right, do you know what media it takes? Do you put in a tape?
Oh, no.
Okay. Okay, so we have a memory stick user. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That counts?
Oh, okay.
All right, so.
Those are one of those little sand disks?
Sand disks. Yeah, the memory card, flash memory, as it's also known as. Good, so everyone has used some sort of video camera. Basically, the most common ones that you'll see that are specifically video cameras, not just still cameras that have the movie mode, are mini DV, Super 8, DVD, hard drive. Mini DV is the one that if you want to maybe ever make a feature length film, you might want to consider buying. Used to be when I first started learning about video that DV cam video cameras were the ones that everyone wanted. I'm not exactly sure why, I just remember that they had the bigger video tapes. And the reason why I say I'm not sure why is because over time the quality between the mini DV cameras that we were using and the DV cam cameras that we were using, the difference in quality was lesser and lesser. But it's still, mini DV, I think, is still sort of considered amateur slash semi-professional. But there's a lot of really nice, really, really nice video cameras that are mini DV. And really just like still cameras, if you think about it, it really comes down to the lens. So if your lens is bad, then it doesn't matter what technology it's using. But specific to video cameras is the CCD. And if you can get a 3CCD camera, then you are very lucky. If you would like to actually take a look at some video cameras, BH Photo Video is a nice website to look at just because it has so many things to look at. And they call them camcorders, which is officially the official term. They have all these different formats here. But typically for a consumer grade camera, you will have something that's nice and compact. Canon, Sony, Panasonic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you'd like to go and become a professional video production company, they do sell professional camcorders, and they give you even more options. Canon is still a pretty popular manufacturer in this arena. JVC, Sony. I'm not sure what our cameraman is using today, but okay, so we're getting taped with a Sony camera, in case anyone really likes the way this one comes out. But in general, the big difference is that a consumer-grade camera, you can get for a couple hundred dollars. To get a professional-grade camera, you're looking at spending several thousands of dollars. And yes, you'll probably notice a difference in quality. If you're using a professional-grade camera, things will probably look a little closer to the movies than if you use your run-of-the-mill mini DV. But neither one should stop you from doing what you'd like to do. I bring up Super 8 only because, or Hi8 or any of those, just because it's still an option. It's not used as much anymore. I've actually never touched one, but you may run into it. So just to have in your memory banks. DVD, these are a little newer than the other two. And they record straight to your to a DVD rewritable that you put into it. And the only thing that might be a little frustrating is, you know, if you have a DVD rewritable, then you can sort of re-record. But if it's just a regular DVD-R, you know, one shot, that's it. You can't really go back and say, I want to reuse this DVD. Whereas with mini-DV, you can reuse that tape technically over and over again. Each time you do, it kind of degrades the quality because it is a physical media. But, you know, if you tend to make a lot of mistakes and you got to start over, you probably want to have digital tape in your video camera. Hard drives are the latest, the newest option. So these are video camcorders, video cameras that have a built-in hard drive. Last I heard, they were getting in the 60s and higher. And the reason why you might want to do this is because for anyone who's ever had to export or take their video footage from their camera to their computer, it can take a while for it to get all the way across because you're basically playing the tape while you're importing. Whereas, you know, if it's a data file, you just go click, move, done. But also just because it gets big. What you'll find about digital video is that the files are big. It eats up lots and lots and lots of space. So, I mean, to put it into perspective, a 1 minute MP3 is about 1 megabyte. A 1 minute video file will probably be more like 100 megabytes. So it even exceeds the size of your typical WAV file. And then, you know, you have your little still cameras that will do movie mode, and those will usually record to flash memory. So someone mentioned Memory Stick, which is a Sony technology, basically. Someone else mentioned SanDisk. I believe that's usually known as an SD card. But those are also, I've seen some pretty nice videos made using those digital still cameras. So again, when it comes to those, when it comes to shooting with those cameras, just see what kind of lens you have, because the lens will make everything look much nicer if it's really nice. All right, so now you know what kind of cables and ports you'll probably be dealing with. You maybe have an idea of what kind of video camera you would want to work with or buy. So then it comes down to what kind of software do you want to use? I've mentioned Movie Maker, which comes with every Windows XP machine. And then there's iMovie, which comes with every Apple OS X machine. Let's say you want to invest in some more features. You have your choice between Avid, Premiere, and Final Cut Pro, and then other things. But those are the three easiest to possibly get. Three easiest in the sense of finding them. Avid, its claim to fame is that it's generally considered like, well, one place considered it the first Windows editing software. Basically, it sort of helped the movie industry move along from doing the take your celluloid, slice, slip in tape, re-reel, reshoot, to just doing it nice and digitally. But it's very expensive. I mean, it's still used by professionals all over the place, but I believe last I checked, I want to say Avid Media Composer cost about $25,000. So if you're your average user, I don't think you want to be plunking down that much. Avid in general, though, refers to a company that makes a wide range of products. So they do make something called Avid Express, but it's still going to be more than, say, Premiere or Final Cut Pro. Or at least that's price-wise what some of the stores were quoting. If you want to see examples of where you might have seen Avid, good places are like MTV. Sometimes when you see the end of credits, you'll see like edited on an Avid workstation or something like that. And just to get a sense of like how professional it is, that same company also owns an audio editing software suite known as Pro Tools, which is sort of the industry standard for audio editing too, in music production. So if you want to really go for it, that's your company. Premiere and Final Cut Pro have a funny history, well, in my opinion anyways. Long story short, basically the team that worked on Premiere ended up working on Final Cut Pro. Premiere is made by Adobe, Final Cut Pro is made by Apple. So if you ever open the two, especially in earlier versions, you might be kind of like, eh, these programs are a little bit similar, which is kind of nice if you're ever having to like switch across platforms, because then, you know, learning curve gets shorter and you don't have to relearn as much. You just need to figure out where everything is again. Adobe Premiere used to be made for both Windows and Macintosh. And in fact, I still remember Adobe Premiere 3, which was extremely simple. It almost kind of looked like the way Movie Maker does today. And at that time, I was using it on a Mac. Today, Adobe will no longer... Adobe has now reached Premiere Pro, version 1.5, I believe, and that is not available for Macintosh. They've discontinued because the competition with Final Cut Pro has just been too much for them. So Final Cut Pro is Apple's very nice program. Now it's marketed, packaged as Final Cut Studio. You can also get an Express version or the Lite version, kind of like Adobe Photoshop versus Adobe Photoshop LE. Personally, I don't recommend one over the other. It's up to you as a user to determine which platform you like and which user interfaces you like better. I've heard a lot more people say they like Final Cut Pro over Premiere. My only advice is if you're using other Adobe products like After Effects, Photoshop, the list goes on. They make too many products now, and they've bought Macromedia. I just lose track now. But if you're using a lot of those things, it might just be easier on your brain. I mean, for example, Premiere, a nice little quirk is that you can import a Photoshop file with layers in it. So that's kind of nice if that's really important to you. But one thing I found that was really nice in Final Cut Pro was color correction. It was a little easier to do it in there than it was in Premiere. So again, it's up to you as a user. What is your priority and what are you doing more? All right, so now to the fun meaty stuff. And everybody who's watching out there, if you happen to be on a Windows computer, I invite you to follow along with what we're going to do next. So everyone who is in front of a computer, please go to the Start menu. And here at the Harvard Lab, you have to go to the Multimedia file under the Start menu. So Programs, Multimedia, and then Windows Movie Maker shows up. For everyone else at home, usually you would find it under Accessories and Entertainment. So, just so that no one gets confused. So just open that up and have it running in the background. We'll come back to it later. In the meantime, obviously we need some footage. Normally, I'd imagine everyone would use their video camera or their little still camera. But since there's so many different little variations, I would suggest looking up your either between your device manual and the help files in whatever software program you're using to sort that process out, because again, it's a little different depending on the camera you've got and the software you're using. In general though, you'll be connecting your camera to your machine with FireWire cable, and there will be some sort of capture video or import video option in your software. But if you just feel like having fun, if you open up your internet browser and go to a search engine such as AltaVista, and I just choose AltaVista for today because they have a very nifty little video tab, and they let you decide what file formats you want to go looking for. An unfortunate quirk of Windows Movie Maker is when you go to import video files, you have to use footage that is in one of these file formats. So you're a little bit restricted, but at least you know what to search for, so you'll want MPEG, AVI, no QuickTime today, keep the Windows Media, no thanks to Reel, no thanks to Flash. You could keep the other in case you really, really want to find something like an ASF file. But, I mean, really, these first three are probably plenty. So, someone suggest a topic we should try to find video footage on. Okay, Celebrity Jeopardy. Let's see if anything has been saved in Celebrity Jeopardy. I do feel compelled to mention my disclaimer at this point, which is, please do remember to credit people properly if you use their material, and ask permission if you can, and never pass it off as your own. Typically what you are finding are probably going to be home videos, but, you know, and, you know, there's a certain release of control that people give when they put it on the internet. But nonetheless, we should try to be respectful of each other's property. All right, disclaimer over. Well, there's a nice little fun-looking video file. Unfortunately, some of these websites, you don't know where it's coming from, so you might want to click on more info first. All right, no idea. Let's take a look. Okay, so this person just gave us a nice little directory of different videos. Let's get this video file, which is an MPEG. I'm going to save it to my desktop just because it's easier to find that way. For anyone who is very, very strict about organization, you may want to save it under My Documents and My Videos, just if you like to keep everything organized. So while that's downloading, I highly...
How did you do that?
Okay, so here's the link for the video file. I just right-click on it.
So you have to go to the link first before you get to the... You can't do it right when you see the picture.
Right, so okay. Basically what happens with AltaVista is, I would suggest going to More Info. It will tell you what the website is ahead of time, so in case you have any qualms about security, for example, you can at least avoid certain types of websites.
Okay.
And then that link will take you to the website that this video file is hosted on.
Oh, okay.
And then usually with these, if you just left-click on them, it'll start opening them up in a player, which is kind of inconvenient. So you want to right-click and do the save link as, and that would get you the actual video file that you would like to have. While you're doing your hunts and searches, and really, I would say maybe for now, two are fine just to get started.
You just save it as what? Just what it shows up, or save it as a...
Save it as what it shows up as,
okay.
Because you pre-filtered it into MPEG, okay. AVIs, and all that. It should be okay, should be compatible with Windows Movie Maker.
Okay.
Depends on the file the file that you choose. For example, if it's 30 seconds, it'll probably be like 1 or 2 megs if you're really lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll just happen in a snap. Choose a 10-minute video, you'll be there a while. Just wanted to mention, in case anyone wants to break into the music video business, you can also go look up audio files using AltaVista. And for Windows Movie Maker, I would suggest getting a WAV or an MP3 file. AIF also works. But if you want to keep your file small, your project small, and your download time low, MP3 is probably your best bet. So, I'm just going to go back to Windows Movie Maker. And so, here we have the capture from video device, and today we can't do that. By the way, isn't it very nice of Microsoft to give you the steps in order? So to get this video file that you got, you click on Import Video right here. And since I saved my file on the desktop, I'm going to go to Desktop and then click on the video file and say Import. Let's see. Alright. So there's my video clip. Sometimes, for reasons unknown to myself, but perhaps there's someone out there who holds the answer, it will sometimes subdivide your clip into many little clips. In this case, it does not appear to have done so, but just in case for anyone else who's out there who's just imported their video clip and noticed, oh my goodness, it's split up into many pieces. So to keep track of where it is, you go to this little toolbar up here and go into this drop-down menu, and you'll see your video effects, video transitions, and collections. Here they call it collections. In any other kind of video editing software, such as Premiere or Final Cut Pro, it would either probably be your library or bin. But here, it is your collections. So Movie Maker lets you do... So once you've imported all the clips... Sorry.
I see on my desktop, but when I do the import video and I see my downloads and I see the icon on the desktop, but when I go to the import video and I click on my desktop, it's not showing it there.
Okay.
Is there somewhere else I can get it?
You definitely said you were going to save to your desktop.
I just saved it as it was, it's showing
okay.
It's on my, there's an icon on my desktop.
All right.
And I got my list of downloads and I had downloaded a couple pictures for the previous section.
Okay.
And Celebrity Jeopardy's there. But I just don't, and it says all files downloaded to desktop.
Alright.
I just don't know why it won't, why I can't get it into the Windows, the Media Maker, the Movie Maker.
Alright. 2 seconds while I go help the student. The question is, we downloaded the file, it supposedly is on the desktop, but for a reason, Movie Maker can't see it.
There. It says it's there.
All right, okay. So the problem in this case was that the file turned out to be a real media file, and Movie Maker will not take real media files. And the reason why you can tell it was a real media file, sorry, we have no screenshot, is that it has .rm at the end. So again, word to the wise, when working with Windows Movie Maker, just make sure you have the right file extensions for your files, or else Movie Maker will not find it.
So what files can we use then?
AVI, MPEG, or WMV. It gives you a couple of other options, but in terms of when you're searching on AltaVista, those are the three that you can pick that also happen to correspond with Movie Maker. All right. Before I move along any further, anyone else have any questions?
I'm having difficulty getting this on saving the video files.
One moment.
The website.
So let's see.
I got this.
Go to the link.
Yep.
All right, in their case, the problem is that they've embedded it. Try right-clicking on it. All right, so I'd just say look for a different file.
Oh.
Because that looks like it's being hosted by him. All right, so for everyone who is out there in TV land, the question was, how come I couldn't download the file off the website? Unfortunately, some of these video files that you find will be embedded into the website itself. It's not just a nice, nifty little link. There are ways to get it off, but depending on how the person coded their web page, it may or may not be a possibility. Particularly if they embedded it using Flash, then my best advice is just go find a different file. usually there's many copies of the same video file out there on the internet, so. You know, chances are you'll find something, the exact thing you want or something similar. Are there any other questions? Or is everyone downloading and importing happily?
Mm-hmm.
No. Too many choices.
I can't find a dub. Oh, there's one.
And I mean, just in case anyone's wondering, you are not restricted to looking for just Celebrity Jeopardy. So we'll just wait one or two more minutes. Actually, in the meantime, actually, if I could just draw everyone's attention back to the Movie Maker interface itself, just so that maybe we can get everyone familiar with the Movie Maker software first and then do the hunting down, the frustrating hunting down processes later. So you'll notice this little area right down here. So here's the movie task list that they have given us. Here is where it displays all your video clips and your video transition options, as well as video effects. And then here's what I would call basically your monitor, where your video footage will be playing. And basically in any software, you'll have your clips window, your monitor, and then the two parts are, other key parts are your tools and your timeline. In this case, they've sort of limited your tools to video effects and video transitions. In other software editing programs, you'd have the option to, say, slice up your video file or use a special move tool, or usually it's a separate little toolbox. And ladies and gentlemen, we have David Malin in the house.
Oh my God, he's everywhere.
Oh my goodness. Yes, he is both omnipotent and omnipresent. So, now that we have David with us.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
I just don't get it, because it says it's an maybe that's not one. But when I don't know, maybe I don't know where to click to make it copy, because if I click on the name of it, it gives me it's an HTML file.
Are you right clicking?
Yeah, I don't. Do I left click? Where do I click on my?
Okay, so you right click. Usually, if you right clicked on the link.
The more info link.
So really breaking down the steps here. if we can. Okay, so. Left click on more info.
Just find the same one you've got, because I'm not.
Alright, I don't know if this one will work, just so you know.
Okay.
Actually, that's an FLV, so let's go find, let's see, refilter our search. For everyone who's learned, done their treasure hunting, we all know the value of filtering things down. So this is the one I used over here. And so on a Windows machine, on an internet browser, well, I'm using Mozilla, but on an internet browser. Left click on more info. Left click on the site link. And then in this case, they've been very nice. They've put everything into a directory. You right click on the link.
Okay.
A little box should open up.
Right.
Click on left click on save link as.
Okay.
You can save as and designate the location. And you left click on save.
But it's an MPG file.
Which is all right, because that is an MPEG file.
Okay, so now I should save that.
Yes. So, left click, right click, left click. I hope everyone got that click pattern.
Wait, would it be okay to open that with a real player?
You can.
There's a different one like that.
You can, I mean, basically you can open it with the real player, it just might not necessarily let you save it. Basically, if you open it with a player, it'll play the video. But if you just want to save the data file, doing the process I described will just get you the file without having to sit through and watch it or try to find a way to save it through the player. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. So rewinding, we quickly went over where the clips were, what the monitor was, what your tools are, and then the most important part for me anyways is the timeline. Movie Maker defaults into what they call storyboard mode. If you're wondering why they might do this, it's because in any major animation or film project, there'll be a process known as storyboarding, where they lay out these still images of key scenes in a certain order so that they know what order they want different events to take place in. If you're happy with your exact clips, the length, the duration, and how they've been executed, all that, storyboard might be really nice and easy for you. But typically, it's better to get familiar with the timeline. The timeline has different tracks, namely the video track, the audio track, and in this case, they give you a title overlay. And the title overlay, okay, I have to break a minute. I heard someone say, this is really cool. May I ask what's so cool? Oh, okay. So, yes, the timeline can be cool. For any audio editors out there, this might seem really familiar, this whole track setup. So video file is pretty self-explanatory. In this case, they've broken it up into the video file, the video track itself, the transitions for the videos, and then the video file's audio track. Then they give you a separate audio track for any extra, like, separate audio that you might want to put in. And then title overlay is if you want to put in credits or any text over your video files. So that is the timeline. And we're going to go into actually doing the editing in just a minute. But I would like to just take a quick 2 to 3 minute break. Actually, 2 to 5 minute break. Depending on how much time everyone needs. And if you want to take this time to go back to your video file hunting, then please do so. So just a quick break right now because it is about 4 o'clock. And then we'll come back. All right, so welcome back, everyone. We just left off talking about the timeline in Movie Maker. Hopefully anyone who was having problems downloading and importing their video clips has managed to figure out a way out of their mess. We're going to take a quick moment to talk about trivia and video camcorders. Our videographer has kindly loaned us an actual mini DV tape. This happens to be Panasonic. Now here's the trivia of the day. Used to be that because each company that makes camcorders typically also makes mini DV tapes, there was this whole thing about, you know, if you have a Panasonic camera, you must get a Panasonic tape. If you have a JVC camera, you must get a JVC tape. So on and so forth for Sony. And I remember that there used to be scares from time to time because, you know, you'd take a JVC tape, you would have done it in, used it in your JVC camera, and then you went and found a Sony tape deck. And then suddenly everything got really screwy. And so then, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, only use the JVC equipment with the JVC media. Only use Sony. Today, I'm not really so sure that necessarily happens anymore. But that's the fun trivia of the day for anybody who likes to be a history buff on things. So our little mascot for today. Okay, so we're getting into the fun stuff, the timeline. So let's grab our video clip and just drag. You just drag and drop. All right, so.
Oh, you just grab one?
You just grab one. So what someone basically said, oh my goodness, it's in frames. It's not necessarily. It's what happened is, as I mentioned earlier, is that, Yes, from Scotland, the mafia creaking. That was what that file was. basically, as I mentioned earlier, for some reason, Movie Maker will sometimes subdivide your clip into many little more clips. Some of you may go, oh my god, why this inconvenience? Actually, in some ways, it's actually really nice. If when importing your video footage off a camera, if you take one long, you know, 20-minute piece of footage and you import it as one file, every time you want to use anything within that file, you're going to have to take the whole thing, put in your timeline, cut out the pieces you want, and then work from there. Whereas if you have lots of nice short takes, you have a little more flexibility and it's a little faster to edit. So having those split up is not necessarily a bad thing. And actually, it could be a lot of fun. Because then, if you wanted to do things where, you know, you repeat 5 seconds three times over, it's already split for you. So, hopefully you've taken a clip, dragged and dropped it. As you may see, they have put in the video file into the video track and the audio file into the audio track. To short, unfortunately, you can't slice it, but say you only wanted what's in between here and here. See, if you hover over the ends, you get these little red double-ended arrows. You click, and you drag to shorten that end, go back the other way, hold down, click, drag to shorten in that end, you have your chunk. Then you can go back and pull in another clip. Now, so that's how you can sort of cheat this whole, like, slicing and dicing of video clips in Movie Maker. Now you're wondering, and as you may have noticed, the audio track is sort of tied to the video track. In this case, you might go, oh my god, what an inconvenience, what if I don't want that audio? Well, they're very nice. If you go up to clip, and you go to audio, you have the option to mute it, fade it in, fade it out, or in general, play with the audio clip volume. And so for anyone who was wondering where I got to that little window, you go to clip, audio, volume. Shortcut is Control U. Likewise for video, they make it easy and they do fade in, fade out as automatic options. The reason why I say that's very nice is because chances are a lot of times when you're doing video editing, you'll be doing a lot of fades, whether it's fade in, fade the video out, crossfade two files. Fading is probably the effect that you will be doing a lot, or the transition, sorry. Not the effect, the transition. Just so you know, transition versus effect. Transition is sort is just to make it more confusing, like a special effect that lets you choose how you move from one video clip to the next. An effect directly affects the video clip itself, whether it's coloring, it's the way the data, the quality, any corrections, any weird warps, etc. That's what you would use effects for. So, if you have two clips in a row, you can start adding transitions. So let's just click on our video transitions options. The most common one will be this fade. It's just a nice cross fade, so as one fades in, the other fades out. Nice and smooth. Another common one is dissolve. You know, just sort of, you know, slowly filtering through the other one. Anything beyond that starts to get a little kitschy. For all the hardcore Star Wars fans, you may remember the wipe. Or I believe I saw the page curl. That's another common one. Yes, the old Star Wars movies are great for finding kitschy transitions. I'm just going to go with a really nice kitschy one. Let's go for a star. So to make this work in Movie Maker, you select the transition you want, click on it, and drag in between the two clips that you want to transition. And it'll stick it in there for you. Now the other thing is, and I've just lost that, only thing I do that's a little inconvenient is that you can't really control many specific aspects of the transition. In something like Premiere or Final Cut Pro, you could go in and say, well, I want it to be this long, I want it to start at this level of video, this percentage of video opacity to that video, a level of video opacity. You know, I want it to happen at this time, and I'm going to put a keyframe. I'm going to, you know, it can get really complicated. This is just nice and basic, and if you'd like to see the results of doing so, Alex Trebek has been starred out. That's just one transition. Let's say we want to add an effect. Go to Video Effects. And let's just... Well, let's make it all old-fashioned in that one. And let's just make this one really slow. So, what does that look like? Actually, hold on a second. There we go. Oh, that's so sad. It didn't apply it. I wonder... Ah, there we go. Now we have the sepia tones. The reason why I paused for a minute is because in something like Premiere or Final Cut Pro, you would have to do something called rendering, which is in that it would know to apply that effect, but it would have to reprocess that data first before you could see what it looked like with that effect on it. That is one of the most inconvenient things about video editing that I would have to say to anyone, is the rendering time. Because it's not even as if it's the final product. You just want to preview everything. And you just have to sit there for, oh, sometimes a few hours, depending on how fast your computer is. So yes, those were some funny little effects we played with. And then now let's just say you want to finish this off and you want to save to your computer. This is the part known as exporting. So you click to save to my computer, you give it a title, let's call this Celebrity, Movie Maker, actually hold on, rewind. Before we export this movie, let's save it. I just realized we should probably save this. So save project, under file. Windows being nice, we'll try to default to the My Videos folder under My Documents. And it has a very long extension, MSWMM. But you can name it whatever you like. And so we'll save all these little designations that you've made. And actually, I've just realized while we're at it, we might as well add a title to this. Just if it weren't confusing enough. So let's see how this process is. Let's add some credits. Say how good we were. CIE 1. Thank you, Alex Trebek. Let's change the text font and color. Let's change how transparent or non-transparent it is, change colors. At this point, it's a free-for-all, explore and play around. So right now it's scrolling. So if you don't like that, you can change the title animation. You can have it mirrored in. Oh, let's do that. That's nice and cheesy. When you've chosen all the things you want to do to your credits, and there are a good number of things you can do to your credits and your titles, click done, add title to the movie, and they will generate it for you and stick it on at the end. Very nice and easy of them. A little harder in the other programs that I've mentioned. Very easy in this one. So when you play it, it'll go through that, and then it'll play your credits. And of course, you can add a video transition in between. Woo. All right, so. Now that we have a beginning, middle, and end, now we can save to our computers. And the reason why I would recommend this is just because then you have a file that you can do whatever you like. It's your data. So you click on that. You enter a file name. It will default to My Videos. You can choose to share it to somewhere else by clicking on Browse. Hit Next. I recommend going into Show More Choices under the movie settings. Because then you have all these other options in here. Not as many options as you might like, but you know, at least you can have a little option over your bitrate or how big you want this to ultimately be. It looks like they default to Windows Media Video. And let me just see if we can. Tools, options, advanced, compatibility. All right, it looks like when we are exporting, we are stuck with WMV. So, save movie file. Doop-de-doop, going back through the wizard. So it's going to save it at 320 by 240, 30 frames per second, at a bitrate of 2 megabits per second. And then you hit next, and it starts saving. I'm going to cancel this, just because. But in this case, this would have been very fast because it was less than 30 seconds. Depending on how, what your resolution is, your frame rate, how long it is, your outputting could take up, oh, and what file format you're ultimately exporting to. Because if you're exporting to something like DVAVI or DV or even MOV, you could be sitting there for several hours. yeah, so good thing to do is finish all your video editing right before dinner and then set it to render and then go eat dinner. Great trick. So the reason why I didn't save that is because I've actually created a project for everyone before I came out here. So I'm going to open it up. And no, I'm not going to save the celebrity. And it's going to look for everything in just a minute. Let's see. I'm going to have to re-import everything. So if anyone's wondering what I'm doing, I made something and I saved it on my handy-dandy little USB flash drive, but because I had made it on a different computer and moved the file locations around, the program is going, where is everything? So something to keep in mind. If you save to your desktop, for example, the next time you open up your movie project, if you moved your movie file somewhere else, it may not find it immediately, so you may have to re-import it in. Something to consider is keeping your project file and your video clips and your audio clips and any still images you're going to use all in one location all together, because it'll be a lot easier for the program to locate it. Even if you take that folder, move it to a different place on your hard drive, or you know, burn it onto a CD, having it all in that one little folder makes it a lot easier when trying to switch between machines. So let's see. Importing. So kitty cats and flowers. It looks like it still doesn't want to render. Let's see, flowers one. All right, I will just have to re-edit this on the fly, but that'll be more fun for everybody, I'm sure. So I also, and the reason why I would like to show everyone this is because I also put in a music track. So take the audio track, stick it into the audio music track. Isn't that confusing? You know, it's called a track when it's the actual file, and then you have to put it into yet another track. Go figure.
Mm-hmm. Could you, if you wanted to add a song from, say, your iTunes,
mm-hmm.
could you just save it to your desktop and just drag it in that way?
Mm-hmm. Well, you could save it to your desktop, and then you'd have to go to import audio or music.
Okay.
And import it the way you imported all your video clips. Only thing is, again, just WAV, AIFF, MP3, MPA, MP2, one of those file formats. And this one is an MP3 file. Here's a case of the whole kitty cat getting split up again. let's see, just stick some fun little video. See, this is a fun one. Shatter right. Let's do shatter in. And let's do a wheel spokes, because that's just fun. Now, the reason why I'd like to show this is because, as I mentioned, you can go to clip, audio, mute. And that way, it will not have to compete with your music track. And so with very, very minimal editing, let's do a grayscale, and let's do a film age oldest. Alright, so our on-the-fly music video just goes through. Alright, so, you can see you can have lots of fun with this. Let me see if there's anything I did not cover. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, when you apply the audio track, and then why did you go to mute and mute? What did you mute?
Okay, I muted, if you notice, there's actually two audio tracks. There's this audio track, which is associated with the video, and you only see this if you've expanded the video track out. And then this is the separate audio track that I put in, external.
I didn't see that first one.
Yeah, it's there. So again, Alta Vista will let you search for MP3s. So if you want to make a music video, which actually I think a lot of people do that for their first video project, because what you end up finding is if you try to edit like dialogue, like actual scenes of actors, you get into this whole issue with things like continuity, like, oh, wait a minute, in that take, the guy had his flower on the left side, but in that next take, they moved it over to the right side. Oh, goodness, we have to go back and find a different take, and we have to match up their voices, and, oh, they didn't speak too well in this one, but the video was really great in that one, so let's just grab the audio from there, the video from there, and, like, try to sync them up, and if you do it wrong, as Ray puts it, you get Japanese monster movie syndrome. which we sometimes have. So, I mean, music videos are usually the easiest because you don't have to worry about those kind of syncing issues, and you can focus on the video quality and not worry about the audio quality. A really fun project to do is if you can get a hold of a camera, find a friend, each go out and shoot different footage, come back, swap, and see what ends up happening. Reason why being, if you're the shooter, you start to think, start sort of editing, pre-editing in your mind how you're going to lay this out or how the story's going to go. But if you take footage that you've never seen before, you know, you might have a totally different story than the other person. Unfortunately, if you're out working off a script, everyone's going to get more or less the same story, but you know, it's a fun project to do anyways. So, it's about 4:30. I'm going to say, let's have everyone just work for about 15 minutes. Not that you only have 15 minutes to work, but just to play around. I'll be available for questions. And then we're just going to regroup again around 4:45 and just do a little bit more wrap-up and discussion. And then you can stay in here and edit, and for the folks watching from home, you know, you have all the time in the world you'd like to edit. So, just going to take a few minutes here, and have some fun. Dum-da-dum. So, does anyone have any questions, or...?
Yes, I do.
All right. We like questions.
Okay, I'm trying to... No, I don't like Snoop Dogg. He's not a favorite of mine. I was trying to get to the to Def Leppard, but I went to here, and then I right-clicked on here.
Left-click.
I mean left-click.
Just making sure.
Yep. And then it brought me to VH1.com.
Right. So if you go back, it's because it's hosted on VH1.com.
So it won't actually it won't actually be there. It's just.
Well, basically, what you can guess is from something like this. See, it's JHTML. Chances are it's going to be like one of those embedded media player files.
Okay.
So. And this is where a combination of the whole treasure hunting abilities come
fine.
In.
That's okay. Like, should I go, should I even try tips for finding this video on the page?
Sure.
Is it even...
It's always worth it. But I think in this case, since it's a .jhtml.
Like, forget it.
Yeah. Make your life easier.
Again, how to make it so this I can't use because it's not one of these.
No,
three, right?
It is WMB.
Oh, I thought you said WMB.
No, it's all right.
Okay. So how again do I put it onto my desktop?
So you left click on there, and then actually
maybe that one.
I think in this case they might have lost their page in the meantime.
Okay.
So they'll
just
keep
find
going.
Another one.
And I just realized it is almost 4:45, so I'm going to have to reroute. Yeah. Okay, actually, everybody, I just realized it is almost 4:45, so we may have to do the wrap-up now.
Oh, okay.
So I'm really sorry. the clock on this computer, and then the clock on there, and the clock on my watch.
They're all different.
This is why time flies. All right, so we're going to do a wrap-up now. And the reason why I'd like to do this wrap-up is because everyone in the class is probably going to be starting making web pages. And some of you may want to share your videos. Two general websites that you can go to are YouTube and Google Video. They let you upload videos, and unfortunately you do need to have an account with each one. So I'm just going to log in with this random account. Same with Google Video. Basically, if you have a Google email address, you can log in. So in YouTube, you'd go to My Videos, and you'd go to Upload a Video, and you'd give it a title, a description, a tag for so that when people wanted to search, then for your video, that's what they would know what to search for. Could stick it in a category, a language. They're rather nice. They actually give you the specs that they would like your video file to be in. Keep going. Wait. Tells you how long your video needs to be. So then you go to browse. Say you upload this video. Open OK. You can designate whether everyone sees it, only if your friends see it, who you want to let know happen, and click Upload Video. And ta-da, you'll have a video on YouTube. Google Video, similarly, you browse for your video file, choose, make a title, make a description, genre, etc., Upload Video. Then your video will be available for everyone in the world to see. Those are certainly not the only two websites that you can go to, but two very popular ones if you want lots of people to see them. Another option is to embed it into your website, and you may have seen other people do. And to do that, I have actually made a link, linked to a page that has a tutorial. And it's a bit of a wordy tutorial, but it will give you the pieces of code that you need. And for everyone who just came out of the XHTML class, This is indeed a tag that you can use. So if you want it to actually be within your specific website, I'd recommend going to this page. Other things I just wanted to bring up. We talked about the actual hardware that you would need for capturing video, but we didn't actually talk about what you might need for your computer. In general, a nice big monitor so your eyes don't hurt. In fact, sometimes using two monitors is a really good idea, only because then you can have your editing interface on one monitor and then the output, so what everything would look like edited together, on another monitor. That way you save your eyes a little bit, you have more workspace. That's a common setup. Another thing you would like to have, high CPU rate, lots of RAM, and usually a nice video card. So as you can imagine, computers intended just for video editing are very pricey, powerful machines. That's not to say you can't edit on a generic machine. I do myself. It just takes a long time. And the reason why you'd want lots of RAM and things like that, and a really big hard drive, because your source footage is going to be really, really big, is just so that you're not sitting there waiting a lot. It's just so that you can just keep moving forward, do more things in real time, not have one, dragging a clip into your timeline take 10 minutes. And then, you definitely want to make sure you have a FireWire port. Might be nice to have a pretty good audio card. And also, you may want to have a separate tape deck nearby, just so that you could save things to tape if needed. So that's what you would need in terms of having a computer hardware. And besides the Movie Maker tutorial, Adobe apparently releases trial versions of all their software. So if you think that Movie Maker is just too simple for you, and you don't have access to the Harvard Labs, you can download a trial of Adobe Premiere. The learning curve is a lot steeper. Some nice things, though, is you have more video tracks, more control over your transitions, and more control over your audio tracks, and just generally more control. So if you think, Movie Maker, piece of cake, I want to do more, you can download a free trial. And if you want to, maybe if you're an Apple user, you can go to this link and get more information regarding Final Cut Pro. And if you're wondering, where are these links? You can just go to the E1 website. Easiest way to go to it is www.computerscienceone.org, and then click into the Go to Website, and then go to Workshops link, and then click on Workshop 11. That pretty much wraps up today's workshop. If anyone has any questions, I'll be around to answer them. But in general, I hope everyone has lots of fun with this, and that, maybe it'll show up in somebody's project. All right, thank you.